Good evening. We are entering into the second week on the seven deadly sin. Last week, Wayne kickstarted the series on a very challenging topic on lust. Today, we are dealing with another sin, the sin of gluttony. And I gave a little subtitle, Stuffing Ourselves to Death. Talking about gluttony, we usually would associate with food, with overeating, binge eating, or obesity. And all these associations, you think about that food, overeating, stuff like that, right? Seems to be one's physical well-being. So perhaps you might think, hey, is it better if we invite some nutritionist or dietitian to share tonight? Or what else, you know, can we do? So, you might think, also wonder, why overeating is considered a sin? How come a type of eating disorder is being considered one of the seven deadly sins? Is there a spiritual dimension about gluttony? Actually, if we go back to history a little bit, we will discover that gluttony has more than one form. And in the Middle Age, one of the theologians, Thomas Aquinas, actually specified five ways in which gluttony can present itself in one's behavior. And each form of gluttony represents actually a disorder way that we give in to the pleasure of eating. The five forms of gluttony can be summarized in an acronym. So tonight, don't worry about the big words later on. Just remember the acronym. I think that's all you need to do. Fresh. Eating fatuously, sumptuously, concerned with seeking pleasure about what we eat. Eating revengeously, excessively, and hastily, concerned with seeking pleasure about how we eat. It took me a while to remember how to pronounce those big words. So let's quickly go through a little bit about each form of this gluttony one at a time. First, eating fastidiously means that giving too much detail, attention about eating, demanding only the most perfectly prepared food. Well, most of us are young students. We probably won't go into this trap. We don't have money, right? But anyway, let me tell you how they define it. Technically, it's not a gluttony of excess, but a gluttony of delicacy. That person demands everything to be correct and perfect, and eat food that is excessively prepared. A modern example will be like a predictable, dissatisfied restaurant patron who go to, say, an expensive French restaurant, but that person complained to the restaurant manager again, again, again about every food, all kind of food. So this is the first form of gluttony. The second one is eating sumptuously or eating luxuriously. Wow, I kind of put some of the cartoon here. Hopefully, we'll make the big word a little bit easier for you. So similar to the first one, this form of gluttony also preoccupied with what we eat. The third form is called eating revengeously or eating greedily. That one may be a little bit closer. It refers to someone who is eating or drinking too eagerly and refuse to share. That person would eat quickly to make sure that he gets in as much as of the pleasurable dish that he wants before anyone else can get to it. For example, you go to a buffet. I know that there are not a lot of buffets in our town anymore, but in case you go to one, that person would be the one who piles his plate high on the first trip to the buffet table. So just imagine, you know, this is the third type. The fourth form of gluttony is about eating excessively or demanding too much food or drink. Excessive eater is someone who is willing to eat past the point of fullness only for the sake of indulging his or her taste. Lastly, eating hastily means that might be a little bit closer to us. Consuming food or drink too rapidly, according to Thomas Aquinas, at that time they don't have fast food yet, but or at an appropriate time. Someone who cannot be patient and enjoy what already chew on, but rather feeling the urge to shuffle even more. as we have seen, gluttony is not just about people with obesity issues. Gluttony is not only about overeating, but a disorder relationship with the physical pleasure. Food is twisted from its proper use to maintain life and being turned into the end itself. And eating turned into gluttony when seeking pleasure dominates everything else. Gluttony represents a loss of self-control and a focus on immediate gratification. I hope that you feel that, seems like this topic a little bit closer than I thought, right? Gluttony reduces eating to an exercise in gratifying our own desire for physical pleasure. As we go back to our earlier question, why gluttony is not just a medical or dietary issue, but a spiritual problem. The issue is, in God's original plan, food is given to us to enjoy. But when our love for food surpasses our love for God, we stop enjoying food as a way to enjoy God. And when the goodness of God is replaced by the goodness of food, this is the reason why gluttony is not just a dietary problem, but a spiritual one. So here's the root problem about gluttony. Rather than God, the sustainer, gluttony focuses our attention on the sustenance. Well, this is another big word. But that is true. Gluttony focuses our attention on the bubble tea or sushi. I don't know what is your version, rather than the sustainer, which is God. Originally, the food and drink were provided by God as a source of nourishment. But when we miss the point, our focus turned to the food itself. And this is exactly the situation we find in the Bible, among the Israelites at Exodus, in the book of Numbers, chapter 11, which is the text that we are going to read today. From the book of Numbers, chapter 11, we notice that the people of Israel have left Egypt, and they have been wandering in the desert for at least a few months. Every day, God miraculously provided manna. I'm sure you heard about that, the story, to sustain them during the journey. They don't have to look for it. They don't have to hunt for it. It just appeared every morning, 6 days a week. But very quickly, the people became tired of manna. Can you imagine? Manna for burger on Monday, and then manna five rice maybe for Tuesday, and then it go on, and then the next week again, manna every day. So people were tired about manna after a few weeks, and then they were dissatisfied and demanded to eat meat. We want meat, okay? Numbers chapter 11, verse 4 is that, now the rebel that was among them had a strong craving. And the gods and the people of Israel also wept again and sat there crying, "Oh, that we had meat to eat. We remember the fish we ate in Egypt." They are from Egypt, right? They were out of Egypt into the desert. So we remember the fishes that cost nothing, the cucumbers, the melons, the leeks, the onions, and the garlic. But now our string is dry up and there is nothing, nothing at all, but this manna to look at. I can imagine when they complain, you know, their faces about that. Moses heard the people weeping throughout the clan, everyone at the door of his tent, and anger of the Lord blazed hotly, and Moses was displeased. This is not a good situation. And then through Moses, God told the people, this is what God said, "Consecrate yourself for tomorrow, and you shall eat meat." Wow, nice. After a few months of manna, the word meat appear on the menu. "For you have wept in the hearing of the Lord, saying, 'Who will give us meat to eat?' And for it was better for us in Egypt. Therefore, the Lord will give you meat, and you shall eat. You shall not eat just one day or 2 days or 5 days or 10 days or 20 days, but a whole month of meat. Ooh, that's great. Remember, they were in desert. Until it comes out at your nostrils and becomes loathsome to you, because you have rejected the Lord who is among you and have wept before him, saying, why did we come out of Egypt? When Joshua heard about God's saying about eating meat, his first reaction, Joshua's first reaction is, are you sure, God? In verse 11, it said, but Moses said, the people among whom I am number 600,000 on foot, and you have said, I will give them meat that they may eat a whole month. Shall flocks and herds be slaughtered for them and be enough for them? Or shall all the fish of the sea be gathered together for them and be enough for them? And the Lord said to Moses, is the Lord's hands shortened? Now you shall see whether my word will come true for you or not. And that what happened, the meat hour. Then a wind from the Lord sprang up, and it brought quail from the sea and let them fall beside the camp. They were camping in the desert, about a day's journey on this side and a day's journey on the other side, around the camp and about 2 cubits above the ground. And the people, okay, remember this thing, imagine these actions. And the people, when they heard, oh, the quail was here, they rose all the day and all the night and all the next day. Wow, that's a long time. And gather the quail. Those who gather least gather 10 homers, and they spread them out for themselves all around the camp for display. Chapter 11, verse 32 tells us that every person who caught quail collected no less than 10 homers of quail each. So how much is 10 homers? They said 10 homers equals 60 bushel basket, which is almost 500 pounds. Wow, that's a lot. 500 pounds of quail? I don't know whether you want to eat that much quail one time. And provided there were 600,000 men took part in the Exodus from Egypt, right? Along with women and children. Let's do the math. Let's assume that just men caught the quail, okay? The women stay back, okay? And if each man caught 60 bushel worth of quail, I did the math, that equals 36 million bushels of quail. That's a lot of hot wings. That's a lot. And unfortunately, the story number 7 did not end at this mega hot wing party. Instead of giving God the glory for the miracle of providing such a bounty, the people began a binge of lustful gluttony that focused on the meat. They failed to give thanks to God, the sustainer, the divine provider. And gluttony focuses the attention on quail. How many, I don't know, how many pounds of quail, right? The sustenance, rather than God, the sustainer. They neglected to recognize God for the miracle, and God was displeased. And when the meat was still between the teeth, the Bible said, the Lord unleashed his wrath against them and sent a severe plague that killed many of them. Therefore, the Bible said, the name of that place was called Kibroth Hattaavah, which means grave of craving, graves of craving, because that there they buried the people who had the craving. At that place, the people who crave food more than craving God were buried. Gluttony focuses our attention on the sustenance rather than the sustainer. So this Exodus story clearly illustrates that rather than focusing on God, the sustainer, gluttony focuses our attention on the food, on the sustenance. And underlying their complaint was a yearn of the pleasure of Egypt. Remember, they mentioned all the fishes and the cucumber, stuff like that, right? The Egypt stuff and the dissatisfaction about God's plan at that time in the desert. And throughout the scripture, as we know that glutton is not only about excessive eating and drinking. Gluttony in the Bible was about an unquenchable desire for more pleasure, for more comfort. And this desire overshadowed our gratitude for what we have and blind us to the needs of others. Gluttonous people approach food for gratification. God's people receive food as a good gift to be enjoyed, celebrated, and shared. So if you have your notebook, you can copy this. Gluttonous people approach food for gratification. But God's people, God's followers, receive food as a good gift to be enjoyed, celebrated, and shared. Well, so much about the sin of gluttony. So we took an overview about the different forms of gluttony. We also traced this biblical connections about gluttony and what happened in the Bible. But let's not just stop here. Our next question would be, how can we find victory over this sin? How do we can find victory over this sin? So let me point out two directions. Number one, food is not my master. Food is not my master. Well, we are in Vancouver, you know, it's not easy sometimes, but let's give you, this is the first direction. Christian life is one of confronting our craving and saying no to them. We need to be aware of the tendency to put things that God has created as gift for us before the giver of these gifts. The Apostle Paul in the New Testament wrote to the church of Corinth and said, I have the right to do anything. But Paul said, I will not be master by anything. And as a follower of Jesus, we need to take a stand and refuse to be master by our appetite. And in order to break this control that food has over us, the discipline of fasting is a good start. Well, talking about fasting, I was thinking, should I do it? It's not easy, right? Especially in Vancouver, in Richmond, right? So what does it mean, the meaning of fasting? Fasting means abstinence from food or drink for health or religious purposes. And it could be a complete fast. It could be a partial one. It could be a lengthy one or a short duration. There are different type of fasting. And in reality, it takes time to build up our spiritual fasting muscle. You know, if I ask you, well, let's go to fast 40 days, I'm sure nobody will sign up for that. But let's think about that as a start, church. What I would like to challenge you, including myself tonight, is to take a tiny baby step to start building up our fasting muscle. Are you ready for that? Here's the plan. Carson mentioned that we just start September. So let's think about September. Today we are, it's what, the seventh day? So we still have most of September. In the next 3 weeks, name one type of food that you crave for the most. I don't know what you want to fill in the blanks. It could be bubble tea, Starbucks, Coke Zero, that's me, and cup noodle, sometimes for me as well. Okay, so let's take bubble tea as an example. I don't know how applicable to you, but let's take an example. Let's assume you have bubble tea 4 times a week. Is it good? Is it too much? I don't know. Well, let's imagine this is you, okay? You make a plan to challenge yourself. For week one, okay, you intentionally plan to cut down one bubble tea during the week. Is it possible? Week two, you plan to cut down 2 bubble tea. And then on week three, instead of doing 4 a week, right, this is assuming that is your habit, you challenge yourself to survive that week 3 with only one bubble tea. Do you think it's possible? Yeah. I don't know, yeah. Well, I'll be speaking in 3 weeks, so I'll come back and check about that. Okay, all right. So let's keep in mind that what's behind all the practices, fasting actually reveal what controls us. The practice of fasting helps us to develop the virtue of temperance, which means self-control. In fasting, we build up our fasting muscle, our spiritual muscle. And in fasting, we also learn to refuse to be mastered by bubble tea or, for me, by Coke Zero. So let's try it, okay? Well, I'll be reminded, if I'm a host next week, I don't know, I'll remind you again. So this is the first direction about finding victory over gluttony. I hope that makes sense to you. The second direction about finding victory over gluttony is growing our craving, not for food, but for God. As mentioned before, Christian life is one of confronting our craving and saying no to them. But to win the battle, there's more than just fighting the battle with no, no, no. The way to fight craving that we don't want is to experience higher craving and have them master us. In Psalm chapter 34, King David wrote, "Taste and see, the Lord is good." If we give ourselves to being satisfied with spiritual milk or spiritual food and spiritual bread, that physical hunger should and would lose its supreme power. In 1 Corinthians chapter 10, Paul taught us, whether you eat or drink or whatever you do, do all to the glory of God. We can bring God into every arena of life, even the most ordinary sort of activity, including eating. Do you believe that? And in order to grow a craving for God, let me suggest two exercises. So tonight we have three exercises. First, about fasting. Okay, this is exercise number two. Eating with gratitude. Eating with gratitude. I don't know, in your family or yourself, I don't know whether you say grace sometimes, and I don't know actually what do you do in that 10 seconds, sometimes maybe 15 seconds. But let's assume we haven't tried it yet. Before meals, usually Christians have a practice called saying grace. And for the coming 3 weeks, I would also like to invite you. Well, you probably can't do it every meal. Maybe sometime you're in a rush or whatever. But at least think about two meals. Maybe you are eating more in a more relaxing way, you know. Two meals before you eat. You really take heart and thank God from the bottom of your heart about that day, about that meal, about that where you are at that time. Thank God for His supplication. Thank God for His guidance. So take time before you plan for two meals. Spend at least a minute, hopefully not just 10 seconds. Try to start your eating with gratitude. Another exercise is eating slow and unplugged. For this, we're talking about eating without distraction. I'm sure we often eat in front of TV, that is nothing new. Or while being on your phone, that we eat, right? Yeah, you see all kinds of examples. Yeah. But just imagine, what would it be like if you eat unplugged and if you eat slow? When distraction is minimized or distraction is gone, your attention will be different. It might be on the food, it might be on yourself. So let me share with you a story about eating slow to end. I still remember an unforgettable meal I had at a retreat camp. Well, not an ordinary, you know, family meal, unfortunately, but it was in a retreat. We were told to enjoy our lunch that one day with only one special rule. no conversation during that meal. We have around 60, 70 people, and then we sit on different tables, okay? At first, everyone feel a little bit uneasy, and I was also feeling awkward. No, what? No talking for the whole meal, you know? It looks pretty difficult at the beginning. But as I started that lunch with that rule, no conversation, I find that actually I have a new kind of freedom. I didn't have to think about what to talk with my friends, you know, we just concentrate on the food. We don't even have to look around, we just focus on the food. And then I started to be more mindful at that moment. And then I find that when I actually eating for every bite, I find that it tastes different too. Compared to, you know, driving through McDonald's and having a quick lunch, I find that I'm much more connected or in touch with what I was eating that day. And during the main dish, I forgot what I ate, but I remember I have a thought that let me check out, you know, it was more Western food, right? I want to check out, think about maybe some vegetable, maybe some spaghetti and some meat, right? And then I thought about, okay, where are they coming from? How each ingredient, how come it's on my table? How about the carrot? I thought about the carrot. I wonder how it was planted. I don't know, maybe some other city, and then how it was harvested, and eventually it come to that retreat center, and then someone cook it for that day, and then I'm eating that. So that was one thought. And then how about the bread? You know, I took a piece of bread, and I was thinking, who baked the bread behind that? And how come it, you know, it take a long process, right? From the field, the harvest, I don't even know all the chemistry there, and then eventually become a piece of bread. So, wow, that is really a long journey from that. So at the end of that meal, to cut the story short, my heart was full of gratitude. I was thankful for that unplugged time that I can eat my food without any conversation. And I was thankful for the opportunity to slow down so I was able to enjoy that particular meal. So I would like to encourage you to try that too. You know, eat slow, eat unplugged. Gluttonous people approach food for gratification. God's people receive food as a good gift to be enjoyed, celebrated, and shared. As we conclude the message, let's spend a minute in silence. Let's reflect on how much we are mastered by seeking pleasure in food and drink. And let's ask God in our reflection to bring redemption in our eating and drinking. So let's have a minute of reflection in silence. Church, let's stand and let's pray together, shall we? Let's stand. Dear God, we confess that on one way or the other, we have committed the sin of gluttony. we confess for our lack of self-control, when we consume our food excessively, when we consume our food in greed. We also confess that we consume our food too fast. And as we confess that, rather than focus on you, the real giver of our daily bread, we often focus on the secondary, on the food, on the drinks, on the snacks. So Lord, help us to seek you. To seek you more than seeking pleasure from food or other earthly pleasure. Lord, help us not to be dominated by anything, not to be master by anything. Lord, yes, we need you. We really need you. Every day, every hour, every meal, we need you. So Lord, help us to declare that you are the faithful one, you are the true bread of life, and you are the real joy giver. Yes, Lord, you are the vine, we are the branches, for apart from you, we can do nothing.